Chapter 14. I was glad we had the ATV. Between the distance we had to cover and all the gear we had to lug, it would have taken us a good deal longer to reach the next camp. Not that I could see much of the trip with Sorsha in my lap, but Darwin finally started to slow down, and I peered around the Irish woman's shoulder to try to get a sense of where we were. It was definitely an airport, though not as large as the one that had become the Liberty Mall. The few airplanes that remained were smaller, for one thing, and the scattered buildings would have looked lost among the concrete expanse at Newark. Darwin drove across the painted concrete and a line of airplanes, then pulled into a building that reminded me of a barn, except much larger. Two more airplanes sat inside, one with the door open, the other sealed tight. Darwin pulled the ATV into a corner and then finally stopped. Sorsha hopped down first and tried to run her fingers through her tangled hair. I tried not to grin as I took in her wind-blown tresses, but it was hard not to laugh at the mess that was her normally smooth golden locks. "So we're going to hang out here with the airplanes?" I asked, as I tested the word I'd picked up at the Liberty Mall.
Not exactly," Darwin said, as he pulled a pair of mage lamps from the back of the ATV and handed one to me. "We'll be moving underground again."
"I knew it. I knew you couldn't stay away from deep, dark places."
Darwin laughed at the assessment, then shook his head. He removed all of our weapons from the ATV, which he passed around, along with the sack of food, and then placed the tarp back over the ATV.
"My wife used to say I couldn't stay away from the lake," the ex-trooper finally replied. "She's always insisted that they would give me a Viking funeral when I died."
"A Viking funeral?" I asked, as we started across the floor of the barn and headed toward a small door.
"You don't know about Vikings?" Darwin asked.
"They were ancient humans. They sailed around the northern areas and plundered any towns they came across."
"Well, I suppose that's accurate," Darwin noted. "In any case, they were sailors and survived by knowing the seas. In one version of the death rites, the body was placed on a pyre built on a ship or a barge. The pyre was lit, the ship released into the water, and everyone stood on the shore to watch the dearly departed return to the seas one last time."
"Fire and water,"
Sorsha murmured. We stepped through the door and walked across a parking lot with a few cars, then down a short slope of the remnants of an old rail line. There wasn't much left of the track except one rusty rail, which we followed to a small range of hills. The rail disappeared, but Darwin followed the edge of the hill around a curve. Then he suddenly vanished from view.
"What the?"
I asked as I stopped. "Where did he go?"
"Nifty, huh?"
Darwin's voice called from somewhere just ahead of us.
"I thought he wasn't supposed to be a mage," I muttered,
as Sorsha and I started forward again. The curve we had been following bent back toward us as it met another hill, and the resulting mashup had created a fantastic landscape filled with boulders, stone pillars, and a gray-green moss that covered everything. There was a point where the slopes ran together, and on first glance it looked like solid stone, but I could see a glimmer of mage light among the tumbled rocks, and as I picked my way through the scree, I saw that there was a small cut in the face, just wide enough for a man to slip through.
"What is this place?"
I asked as I slipped through the crack. I could hear water dripping nearby and smell the earthy tang of cold stone. Darwin didn't respond, simply led us deeper into the narrow crack. We finally emerged into a tunnel that was far too smooth to be natural. A railroad track ran along the middle of the tunnel and disappeared in the inky blackness beyond our lamplight. Darwin led us along the track until we reached a point where a pile of rocks blocked the trail, then edged around to the other side through a narrow gap. I followed more cautiously and let out a low whistle of appreciation when I stepped into our next camp. Over the years, Darwin had dug a fire pit, hauled in plenty of dry wood, added a shelving unit which held several boxes, and stashed away several sleeping bags. It was dry, if cold, despite the water that I could hear.
"How did you know about this tunnel?"
Sorsha asked as she slipped through the gap.
"This tunnel was built just before World War II, Darwin replied as he worked on building a fire. "It was built to make it easier to transport steel from Allentown to the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and needless to say, it became a lot more important after the war started. Once the Navy Yard shut down and the steel mills closed, though, the rail line was largely forgotten. But my old man was a history buff, and he used to love nothing more than to drag us kids along with him on the weekends when he would go looking for the forgotten places.
World War II? That was, like,
a really long time ago, Darwin interjected. And no, I wasn't alive then. The war happened some 70 years before I was born.
It turned out that the rockfall served as a tidy wall, making it difficult for anyone to sneak up on us, even if they somehow found the entrance to the tunnel. It also trapped the heat and light on this side of the track, which kept everything nice and cozy despite the chill in the tunnel. After we'd snacked on some jerky and gulped down some water, Darwin opened up one of the boxes on the shelves and pulled out several pencils and a pad of paper. We gathered around the fire pit as he drew a map of the interior of the police department and showed us where all the offices were located, as well as the cell where Freya was kept. We talked about the number of deputies in the department, as well as the rotation schedule they kept, and some of the other precautions that Darwin had helped establish in the department. By the end, we had a simple plan, but one that would, hopefully, go off quickly and without any problems. "So Medrick does this town meeting every week?" I mused.
"It's mostly so he can talk about how great he is, but he does sometimes help out the local citizenry as well. It also gives the townsfolk a place to complain, even if Medrick doesn't intend to actually do anything to address their complaints."
"Hopefully Medrick will have a good turnout tomorrow night," I said as I thought about the crowd gathered outside the jail. Our plan would work a lot better if we didn't have to deal with an angry mob as well.
"You can count on it," Darwin snickered. "They won't pass up their chance to complain about the mutant invasion, and Medrick will be happy to tell them all about his plans to kill off any surviving mutants."
"The only real question that's left, then,"
Sorsha noted as she stretched the kinks out of her back,
"is what to do once Freya's free."
"I'll take her somewhere safe," Darwin declared.
"But where?"
"I've heard of places."
Sorsha studied him in the firelight for a moment, then gave me a quizzical glance. "You know, you two could come with us. You wouldn't have to go all the way to the island if you don't want to, but it would probably increase the odds for all of us to survive if we traveled together, at least for a while."
"Is that what you offered Freya?"
"No," I admitted. "Actually, we told her she shouldn't come with us because it would be too dangerous."
"But she can't stay here, nor can you. And if the mages believe you have guns, well, they'll be hunting you as well. So either way, Freya will be facing that danger."
"Ah, but doesn't it make more sense for us to split up? If we do that, then they'll have two groups to hunt instead of one, and that may increase the odds of success for one of us, since they'll have to split their resources."
"They have a lot of resources," I pointed out as I thought about all the mages I had faced since I discovered my magic.
"Oh, that they do," Darwin agreed.
"Hicks and I can do this, but having someone with your skills and experience on the journey would make it easier."
"And I would guess you've taught Freya a few things about survival as well," I suggested. Darwin stared into the flames for a minute, then regarded the two of us with an inscrutable look.
"Do you have a next step?" the old man sighed. "I mean, besides just heading west."
"I was looking at the atlas Evan gave us,"
Sorsha replied before I could say anything.
"We can follow some of the old highways to Gateway."
"St. Louis?"
Darwin asked in surprise.
"Why there?"
"It's the halfway point, roughly, between the two coasts. It's the major transit point for people traveling between the coasts who don't have access to a really powerful portal mage. We should be able to find someone who can move us closer to the west coast from there, and it won't attract any attention from the Magisterium because it happens all the time."
"And you think you can just walk there?"
the ex-trooper asked in disbelief.
"Do you know what lies between here and there?"
Sorsha and I glanced at each other.
"Well, everyone knows the stories. It's mostly a lawless area, filled with brigands and criminals. There are mutant reservations as well, but Hex and I already made it through one wasteland."
I nodded, though our escape from Short Hills had been a close thing, and had probably cost Vance's life.
"Oh, Lord, but you know nothing," Darwin chuckled. "So along with these brigands and criminals, what else do you think you'll face?"
Sorsha murmured as she looked at me. I've lived rough since I was a kid, I assured him. I can survive off the land.
While mutants and outlaws are chasing you? And I know trailhands always travel in groups. You have to if you want to bring the cattle in alive. So now it's just the two of you, and you'll be outnumbered everywhere you go. And don't even get me started on what winter in the mountains is like. You'll be lucky if you don't freeze your asses off the first night.
Then what would you suggest?
Sorsha asked innocently. Darwin wasn't fooled, though, and for a moment I thought he wouldn't answer.
Go west, he responded. But head north more for the Great Lakes. Well, Great Lake now. At the western tip of Pennsylvania, near Erie, there's a ferry that'll take you to the real Motown, Detroit. From there, you have a couple of options. Stay on the water and take the Mississippi south to Gateway. That's your first option.
And what's the second? I asked, when Darwin didn't add anything else.
Well, it is Motown, Darwin mused. Do you know what industry put Detroit on the map?
Sorsha and I shook our heads and waited for Darwin to continue.
Detroit was the automobile capital of the world for decades. Time was when almost every car in the world was American and came from Detroit.
But no one makes cars anymore, I pointed out.
I know that. But I'm sure you've seen those conversions, the ones that are powered with some sort of magic.
I've heard of them,
Sorsha said.
And do you think there are just a bunch of mages out there that know how to do this?
Darwin pressed.
No.
No, indeed. Look, I'll admit, the first time I saw one of those, I thought about getting my hands on one. But back then, there were still a lot of problems with the things. They were unreliable, so you couldn't take them very far. And after a few months, they just stopped working.
But there are better ones today,
Sorsha added as she suddenly sat up.
There are, Darwin stated, and the best ones, as near as I can tell, come from Detroit.
But then we'd just be back to crossing the land instead of riding a boat down the river, I pointed out.
But we'd be in a car, or actually something more like a jeep, maybe. In either case, something that could carry people and supplies and outrun anything on 2 or 4 feet.
We'd have to come up with a lot of money, I replied.
Oh, I'm sure we can do that. Just look at what you did at that inn.
That was a few hands of poker against players with okay skill. We won't get that lucky every place we stop. Sorsha and I fell silent, and I stared into the flames as I tried to imagine how we could come up with ways to pay for a car. Darwin watched us both, then picked up a poker and jabbed at some of the logs.
Well, that's what I would do, he declared.
So if we head toward the Great Lake and take the boat to Detroit, will you and Freya at least travel that far with us?
Sorsha asked. Darwin prodded the fire again, then set the poker down. He looked around the cave, then finally turned toward Sorsha.
If it were just me, I could pack up the guns and disappear without a second thought. And hell, if they got too close, well, I could make sure I took out plenty of them before I went down. But I have to think about Freya. That girl deserves a shot at a normal life.
She does, I agreed.
It could be that there's a good place for her near one of those mutant zones, or maybe in the town that Sorsha mentioned. Wherever it is, I have to help her find it. And that'll be easier to do if we have some help.
So that's a yes,
Sorsha said gleefully.
Only until we reach Detroit, Darwin quickly added. After that, well, we'll see.
And just like that, our party of two had become a band of four. That's if we could rescue Freya and make it out of town. But hey, we'd already survived the wilds of Brook Island and the wastelands of Jersey. What could be easier?